I'm Traitor. Let me through.
Of course. First, I'll have to take your weapon. Baron's orders.
Yeah, fine.
Thank you. Come with me.
The front room had high ceilings with exposed rough beams. The floors were made of polished wood. Dominating the room was a massive stone fireplace and mantel. Above the mantel, up the front of the fireplace, was a collection of mounted heads. Some animal, some human. The humans, which were all male, appeared to be screaming, glass eyes bulging, jaws agape, tongues extended. The skin of their faces had an unnatural burnished red color.
Admiring my trophies, traitor?
Traitor turned and faced the self-appointed ruler of Virtue Lake. Lundquist Zeal was dressed in a floor-length robe made of dense brown fur that might have been mink. As the tall man teetered toward him, Traitor caught a flash of bare white spindly leg and thigh, marked by a tracery of blue veins. The Baron was naked under the long coat. The idea made Traitor wince. He winced again as he took in Zeal's unusual choice of footwear. Where the hell had he found a pair of red stiletto heels in size 11? On either side of the Baron, more Sekhmen stood with their handguns drawn.
You killed all those guys by yourself?
No, but I did the taxidermy myself. Lifelike, aren't they? I designed the display as a trolloy. It's like they're sticking their heads through a hole in the wall.
Amazing.
One does what one can to alleviate the monotony.
Zeal cultivated the reputation of being as crazy as a rat-addled dog. If Traitor hadn't known better, he'd have thought the bastard was even further gone than that. He might have figured that the Baron had caught himself a case of the oozies, and that the disease's little worms were happily eating thousands of tunnels in his brain. But Traitor was no triple stoop. Though Zeal wore his trademark makeup and the high heels, he wasn't effeminate. He lumped around in those high-heeled women's shoes like a drunken spider. He dressed that way for the shock effect, in order to become even more a figure of hatred and fear. The idea being, with a guy who looked as rad-blasted queer as he did, you never knew what the fuck he'd do, or when. It no doubt helped the Baron control both his slaves and Sekhmen.
Do you want something to drink? I have everything from champagne to rye whiskey.
I'll drink with you after we finish our business.
Fair enough. Where are my blasters and ammo?
They're safe. They're close by.
I sense an element of mistrust, and that makes me very unhappy.
Well, don't take it personal. In case you haven't heard, I don't trust anybody. That's how I stay in business. Before we make the switch, I'd like to see the color of your gold.
And if I refuse?
We move on.
And what if I won't let you?
We level the place, and then move on.
Very well. Follow me.
With the Sekhmen bringing up the rear, the Baron led him through the big house, toward the end of the building facing the bluff. The mansion had been furnished to suit Zeal's taste, which ran to everything gaudy. Garish, violent paintings clashed with upholstered sofas that clashed with rugs. The rooms were obstacle courses, thanks to his collection of perfectly god-awful crap. Zeal stopped in front of a diorama made up of objects that had been traded for fuel. Traitor couldn't read the nameplates, but he recognized one of the life-sized statues. Marsh Folsom had once shown him a picture of a red-haired clown known in pre-dark times as Ronald. Made of hollow plastic, it was positioned in a conversational setting, with three female fashion mannequins dressed in black garter belts, thong panties, and stiletto heels, and to one side, as if conspiring, a pair of short, hairy men wearing fur togas. To Traitor, these last two looked like swampies.
Men, open it.
Zeal's henchmen moved the big clown out of the way, opening up the access to the far wall. Zeal slid his hand along the paneling until he found a hidden catch.
Turn your head, Traitor. I have to disable the booby traps before we can proceed.
Traitor put his back to the Baron. The two swampies had definitely seen better days. Chunks of plaster were missing from their elbows and cheeks. Their fur wraps were moth-eaten. Why anyone would want to make a statue out of a swampy was a mystery to Traitor. Of course, if he could have read the nameplate, he would have realized that they were actually a pair of Neanderthal replicas looted from a natural history museum in Chicago.
All right, come ahead.
A hidden door opened onto a hall hacked into the limestone bedrock. The ceiling and walls were buttressed by peeled logs. Zeal plucked a torch from a sconce and lit it.
Men, you may leave us. Traitor, follow me.
You don't take any chances, do you?
Security is the most important part of leading. You, of all people, should know that.
The corridor wound back into the bowels of the hillside before it finally ended in another door.
Again, please turn around. All right, come on.
Zeal's treasure room was a chamber roughly 10 by 10, lined floor, walls, and ceiling with rough-sawed boards. In the flickering torchlight, Trader could see a row of strong boxes along the foot of the far wall.
The shipment we arranged was 10 crates of Predark auto blasters. Unfired blasters, 10 to a crate. Still in factory packaging. And the ammo was to be 200 rounds per blaster, which makes it 20,000 rounds of government-issue caliber-compatible full metal jacket.
You got it. 100 blasters with ammo in exchange for 50 pounds of gold.
Zeal leaned down and opened one of the chests. Heaped gold flashed in the torchlight. Trader stepped closer and took a look. What he saw was a collection of old wedding rings, earrings, cufflinks, fountain pens, and wristwatches. But most of the volume was made up of Predark dental gold, no doubt sourced by grave robbers. Crowns, chunks of filling, bridge work. The precious metal was no longer used in dentistry in Deathlands, where bad teeth were simply pulled.
May I?
Of course.
Trader dipped his hand in and picked out some samples.
Our deal was for pure gold. Half this shit still has teeth in it. Or it's just 10-carat plating. Our arrangement was that I'd be paid in ingots of pure gold. Is this all you've got?
Ah, gold is gold.
Not if it's like this. What else have you got to trade?
Zeal dipped a hand into the pocket of his fur coat and pulled out a slender glass vial filled with an amber liquid.
Here. Not too close to the flame.
That's gas, all right. Not more than 75 octane. If I put that sheep piss in my wags, it's gonna make them knock like rad blazes. No can hell, it's no better than your so-called gold.
You don't have to use it for yourself. You can trade it somewhere on down the line. Other vills will be happy to get it.
Huh.
I'll give you 3 drums of gas for every blaster.
We're talking 55 gallons?
Of course.
Make it 6 drums, and I'm only delivering 10 blasters, with 100 rounds each.
I'll pay you 6 drums per blaster for the original 100.
No way. I can't haul that much extra fuel. Won't be any room in my transport wags for anything else.
It's a deal.
Trader was shocked. At 330 gallons of gas per weapon, even with 100 rounds thrown in, the Baron was getting reamed big time. And he had to know it. When presented with such a thorough no-kiss screwing, a hard-nosed businessman like Zeal should have gone ballistic and threatened to kill Trader and his entire crew.
And now that the deal is set, let's go back into the big house and get ourselves some refreshments.
A shiver passed up Trader's spine, like someone had just walked over his grave. As Ryan and the others walked through the shantytown on their way to the gaudy strip, they drew a small crowd of children, half-naked and caked with filth, the young of Virtue Lake pressed in around them. The expressions on their faces were heart-rending. Each held one hand open and outstretched, and with the other pointed desperately at his or her open mouth. Ryan caught one kid trying to steal his ponga, but not before the light-fingered little crook had it pulled halfway out of its leg sheath.
Hey, wait a minute!
Ow!
You don't want to be touching that unless I say so.
Well, give me some food.
Got no food.
Give me a token, then.
What can a snot-nosed squirt like you do with a gaudy token?
Same as you, goggle eyes, brew and screw.
The companions exchanged dark looks.
Catch us on the way out of the ville. We'll have some food for you and your friends then.
You're just trying to get rid of us. You can go get shit-faced.
Yeah, that's right. But I'm not kidding about the food. I wouldn't joke about something like that.
Fine. You go right ahead. But I'll remember you, One-Eye. You better have some food for us.
You know, for a cold-hearted, mean son of a bitch, you got a hell of a soft streak, Ryan.
Yeah, he's a regular Santa Claus.
As they neared the double row of gaudies, Ryan took out the bag of tokens.
Now, we might as well start at this end of the line and work our way to the other. That is, unless poets worked up a safer strategy for tackling the sluts of Virtue Lake.
What the
the hell was that?
It came from over there.
A crowd milling in front of the strip mall immediately took to its heels, spreading out over the parking lot. Ryan saw two guys facing each other on their knees under the facade's long portico. Their guns hung limply in their fingers. Both, it seemed, had been mortally wounded in the close-range exchange. Both plunged face first to the pavement.
I got his boots!
You got him last time.
The crowd swarmed in, stripping the corpses of their few valuables. The companions crossed to the other side of the street.
Stick together. Watch each other's backs.
Under the circumstances, Ryan considered the warning unnecessary and annoying.